Now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution, with your host, Michael B.
My name is Michael B., and this is the Truth Zone, emphasis on truth. Deep within the vortex of the information revolution. Show is running late today. The laptop decided to do an impromptu update, which I didn't think was going to take an hour. But hey, it is what it is, and quite frankly, I don't think I want to talk to you people for an hour today anyway. Very disappointed in what I'm reading on Facebook Universe. You people just don't get it, do you? This situation is not about healthcare. It's about the federal government taking away states' rights and dictating and controlling an entire industry called health insurance. This is supposed to be regulated by the states. The federal government is to protect each state and its citizens from fraud, from egregious and unconstitutional laws, and private companies from frauding its customers. It's called checks and balances. The federal government is not supposed to take over an industry and dictate its terms with no checks and balances and no oversight. And it's obvious that you people don't get it. And you're still calling for improvements in healthcare. Okay, healthcare and the quality of it is not in question here. What is in question is access to it and how much it's going to cost. The federal government, under Barack Obama, ruined affordable health insurance for American citizens. No one can dispute that. The only ones that are winning are the super rich who have the cash to pay for doctors. So they're at the front of the line. Then we have the very poor who is feeding off your hardworking, I don't want to use the term middle class, because the class structure is not an American concept. It's a totalitarian concept. The aristocrats at the top, call them the elites. The middle people who work and you know, at this point, scrape by, paying for the rich. And then you have the dirt poor that feeds off of the middle class because, well, the rich, they have their exemptions and, quite frankly, they have their shelters, and they're not affected. Their day-to-day lives are not affected by the menial, and yes, menial to what they make, when we're talking about the elites, the menial taxes that they pay. They're not affected. We, in the middle, we are affected. And as the federal government continues to grab more and more power, we, in the middle, get the short end of the stick. Now, the poor class does too, because they remain poor. They don't have incentive or really a gateway to improve their lives. they're being fed propaganda that everybody hates them, and to be angry at successful people. Meanwhile, those in Washington and the large corporations are laughing. They're laughing all the way to the banks that they created in 1913 and the banks that protect and sponsor them. And this is what's going on with health insurance. I'm seeing people write, my health care, no, your access to the best quality health care in the world has been compromised. And for those of you that think this so-called Affordable Health Care Act, America, whatever, I don't care what they call it. It's Obamacare 2.0. And it's funny, some jerk, and yeah, I'm going to give out his name, J. Michael Jones on Facebook, criticizes Rand Paul for standing against this, and I just gave him some facts. I didn't even attack him. I gave facts. The 30% surcharge, the mandates, a lot of the taxes are still in there, a lot removed, but a lot still in there. He blocked me. Blocked me. Cut me off of his thread. Because I kicked his ass. I guess I grabbed his pussy. What a shame. Well, hey, I'm sorry that you can't handle facts, J. Michael Jones or anyone else. He wrote that if you're on the side of Rand Paul and not repealing and replacing Obamacare, you're in favor of Obamacare. That's not even anywhere near intelligible. That makes absolutely no sense. Because I don't love the GOP's Obamacare 2.0. I'm in favor of Obamacare 1.0. That's not even coherent. No, like Rand Paul, I'm in favor of the Constitution. I'm in favor of a limited federal government that needs to get out of my pocketbook, right? Out of my wallet, out of my life. But it seems like so many of you people just don't know what's going on here. And I really thought that the people on the right were smarter than those on the left. And no, I'm not getting that feeling. I'm just getting the feeling that this is like two football teams going at it. And as long as your quarterback is the guy you want in there, you think you're winning. Well, in many ways, some ways you are. A lot of ways you aren't. And this GOP health insurance bill, and that's what this is, it's a health insurance bill. This has nothing to do with the quality of care. Matter of fact, you cannot find an article. Do a control F or a command F if you're using Apple products and type in quality of care. You won't find anything. This is about health insurance premiums and the federal and taxes and the federal government regulating it. Donald Trump promised that we could deduct our health insurance premiums like corporations do. That is not on the table in this bill. He promised the defunding of Planned Parenthood. He didn't put a cap on it. This GOP bill says for 1 year. What happens in year two? Obviously, they recontinue, resurrect the funding of Planned Parenthood. I don't see anybody but me commenting on this. Am I honestly the only one awake? I think I am. The tax penalty has been transferred from the IRS directly to the insurance companies, with this 30% surcharge for not having continuous coverage. And it doesn't give any exemptions like divorce, job loss, any of those things. You don't have continuous coverage, you're paying a 30% surcharge. It didn't say for 1 month, so I just have to say it's got to be for a year. And I've used this analogy over and over again. Family of four, $12,000 for the year, that's a $3,600 surcharge. Okay? Broken down, that's an additional $300 a month. Because you didn't have continuous coverage, and it doesn't matter why. Now, I don't know who could be happy with that. The first year of tax penalty under Obamacare was like $500. I think year two was like $1,500 or $2,000, whatever. And, excuse me, all based on salary, of course. This is a 30% hit. Seems like you people are okay with it. You're just blinded by your hatred for Obama. And I get it. I thought the man was disgusting. At the same time, though, just because our guy is in doesn't mean that we should accept the same policies. And that's exactly what's happening here. The criticisms of Rand Paul are a disgrace. Rand Paul is the only high-profile, household-name senator actually sticking up for America. I don't know who the Susan Collins is, but I know who Rand Paul is. He's the only guy standing up for us. And what great criticism this man is getting. I am deeply disappointed in what I'm seeing in Facebook universe, and it really makes me feel like I'm by myself in all of this. Now, some people are writing, this is a breach of the Constitution, or, but they're not saying why. No one also is mentioning the fact that the Republican Party in late 2015, now I got this wrong. I thought it was August of 2016. I was wrong. It was late 2015 and Obama vetoed it in early 2016. The GOP in the House and the Senate passed a bill to repeal Obamacare. If you look at article after article on that, do a control F on that, and type in the word replace, you will get zero results. There was no talk of replacement. The Cadillac tax on the best health care plans, that tax was removed. In this bill, it's still in. And I'm going to tell you why that was done. The GOP knew that Barack Obama was going to veto it, but they were going to look good in the eyes of the public, setting up the November 2016 elections. Now that they've won more seats, and they have a Republican president who is just itching to sign anything. Anything that gets passed. He'll sign it. Donald Trump made it clear. He'll sign it. Now, the stuff that was promised is not in there. Donald Trump never talked about a surcharge to insurance companies for not having continuous coverage. Never said it. Now that's in play. And Rand Paul is being criticized. I'm extremely disappointed, I have to say. I don't know why you people want the federal government dictating your lives. I just don't understand it. I don't understand why you want to remain broke. I don't understand why you, excuse me, want to remain in servitude. I don't get it. Do you like being a slave? Do you like being the federal government's bitch? Do you not understand? Look, if this health insurance bill, if any of these health insurance bills were so great, how come our elected officials don't have to subscribe to it? Did you ever ask yourselves that? Some people asked John McCain, being a veteran, why didn't he go to a VA hospital? Simple. He's an aristocrat. He's an elitist. He's privileged. All of these people are privileged. Do you not understand that Washington, D.C. is just as much of a totalitarian monarchy? Just because Trump doesn't wear a crown doesn't make it not so. They're a monarchy. They're an aristocracy. You have to be filthy rich to get in there and become a household name. You have to be. If you're a local guy in the House of Representatives that squeaked through your district, trust me. If you don't play along, you get squashed. You will never see re-election. Just watch the series House of Cards on Netflix, and you will get an education on how it's done. And we feed this beast. Excuse me, allergies, brutal. We feed this beast over and over again. And we seem to enjoy it. This health insurance bill is one step closer to European-style single-payer. And I've known this since the 80s. It is a disaster, which is why everyone wants to come to America, especially when they're sick. It's not the other way around. The only people that go to Cuba for tit jobs are the ones that want to save a little money from having it done here in America. That's about it. Okay? That's about it. Or Brazil, wherever they go. This is the number one healthcare industry, country in the world. Everyone wants to come here. It's the health insurance. That's the problem. It's federal government. That's the problem. And Rand Paul is the only one sticking up for us. And I'm going to play Rand Paul again. And then I'm going to get into this article by Lindsay Wise. I pulled this off of Drudge. And we're going to see why there's such a problem. So again, here's Senator Rand Paul, the only one, the only household name that is sticking up for America.
And back to the battle over health care. I spoke a short time ago with Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, one of the key votes that could determine the future of the GOP effort to repeal and replace Obamacare. Senator Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Is there any doubt in your mind if the vote had gone ahead today or tomorrow that the bill would have failed?
You know, I don't think there were enough votes, but I think there also just hasn't been enough time to have a full discussion. We just got the bill last week. We just got the CBO score on Monday. So there needs to be a little bit of more time to absorb this, but then also to discuss What are the changes that the leadership might be open to in order to get it to pass?
Well, speaking of that, you met with President Trump at the White House earlier today. You tweeted after your meeting, you said, real Donald Trump is open to making the bill better. Is the Senate leadership? My question to you is, in the president's meeting right now with the rest of the Republicans in the Senate, what changes does the president want to see in this bill?
Well, you know, I don't think it's so much him lobbying us for changes. It's us, you know, asking him for help and getting the changes done. I think he has the bully pulpit. He has a great deal of influence with the Republican Party on both the House and the Senate side. And I think the bill right now, to the conservative point of view, doesn't have enough repeal. In fact, it looks like we're keeping a lot of Obamacare. Even the architect of Obamacare, Jonathan Gruber, said, hey guys, don't worry, we're actually keeping Obamacare. So we actually think that there needs to be more repeal. That's the message I took to him. But I also took a specific list that we're sending to Senate leadership, and we're saying, if you address these items, there's a possibility we could vote for this bill, but it's got to look more like repeal and less like we're keeping it.
Well, as you know, what the president has said about the House version of the bill, which many people said was tougher than the Senate bill, he said it was mean and he wanted a bill with more heart. So where are we on this?
You know, I think there are various ways you can characterize both Republican and Democrat, you know, proposals. President Obama, I think, wanted what was best for the country, but I think it didn't work well. I think we have the death spiral, and I think, you know, particularly premiums in the individual market are going through the roof. I think Republicans want what's best for the country also, but I think they're not fixing the death spiral of Obamacare. They're going to subsidize it with a lot of taxpayer money. So characterizing something as mean or generous, I think, goes to people's motives, and I think it's...
See, the thing about, you know, I get it. You know, Rand Paul has to deal with these people. He has to work with them, but he's just too damn nice. No, the Republicans and the Democrats don't want what's best for Americans. They want what's best for themselves, and that's putting themselves in a position to get reelected. They're not interested in us. They're interested in convincing us that they're good people, they're looking out for us, and then we reelect them. And we get burned, and then we reelect them. Then we get burned, then we reelect them. Then we get burned, then we reelect them. You get the point? That's what's happening here. They tickle our ears, excuse me, we fall for it, and we vote for them. We gladly pay our taxes. We gladly go about our business. We bitch and moan on Facebook. We look for another hero. We vote for that hero. And then promises that were made, they go out the window. And yes, I'm talking about Donald Trump. Where is he? I am sure that he is aware that both parties passed that bill that I talked about. All Trump has to say is bring that same bill, that same exact bill, with a couple of minor changes. One, take off the state borders to allow better competition. That raises the quality of health insurance packages, and it lowers the price because we'd have more choice. And finally, see, it's very simple. Make our insurance premiums tax deductible like the corporations. That's what he promised. That's it. Bring back that bill that was passed. Add those two items. Vote on it, pass it, put it on Donald Trump's desk, sign it into law, ball game over. But no, he's silent on that. And that tells me, folks, that his promises were empty air. Too bad. Too bad if you don't like what I'm saying. Too bad. Don't tell me that he's not aware of what's in that bill and he's dying to sign it. And he's really getting desperate. Now he's telling the Senate, just repeal the damn thing. We'll look at replace later. Because he knows we're getting frustrated. But here's the thing. Okay, great. I'll be thrilled with a total repeal. That's your late 2015 bill. Great. But that's not happening here. Obamacare, first of all, doesn't even need to be repealed. It could have been defunded over and over again by the House. They've refused. Also, as Jerome Corsi explained, and I don't have all the details, I should have, that's my fault. He said something about a lawsuit or an appeal just needs to be stopped and Obamacare gets defunded. That's it. So the Attorney General can make it happen. The House of Representatives could have made it happen, but no. So we're messing around with Russiagate. We're messing around with this health insurance garbage. Meanwhile, where are the tax cuts? Donald Trump says, well, you know, my advisor said that we can't do tax reform until we get this health insurance issue resolved because, well, you know, we need to pay for this and we need to figure this stuff out. Incorrect. How did we have tax reform under JFK and Ronald Reagan when the federal government had nothing to do with the health insurance industry? Nothing to do with it. But we had tax reform, though. How did that happen? It's interesting. When they raise our taxes, it's never contingent on something else being passed. But now they want to tell us that our tax deductions are contingent upon another piece of legislation. And you people want to believe that? That is a lie. And as I showed you last week, the Kennedy and Reagan administrations actually took in more money when taxes were lowered because jobs were created, more people were paying in, and twofold, less people were dependent on government, so less money was going out. The debt grew under Ronald Reagan, not because of the tax cuts. That's because under his second term, the federal government greatly expanded. If you don't know what expanded means, it got bigger. Translated, more people were hired, more programs were installed, and that all takes money. So, the added revenue that was brought in from we the people getting more jobs from the tax cuts did not outweigh the expanse of government and the cost under Ronald Reagan. That was the problem. And it's just astonishing. So, I'm going to go into this article. It's written by Lindsay Wise from the McClatchy Washington Bureau, an independent source. One big reason Senate Republicans are having trouble uniting around their plan to overhaul the nation's health coverage is that a lot of them just don't get along. These intra-party clashes of personality and policy stymie the bill's progress as much as any other political force. Sure, lawmakers are reluctant to side with President Trump, particularly in traditional swing states such as Ohio or Wisconsin. And waiting in the House are conservatives who are wary of the latest Senate plan crafted to win over centrists. Well, I don't know who exactly the centrists are, but I don't think those are constitutional-loving people, because those that really understand the Constitution and understand what's going on here, very few are not in favor of this bill. But what's hurting the Senate's effort to come together are the personal relationships or lack of them. Right. It's their personal ego. It's their personal gain over serving the public's interests. Absolutely correct. Senator Pat Roberts, who was involved in drafting both versions of the Senate health insurance bill, said he hasn't spoken to his fellow Republican senator from Kansas, Jerry Moran, about why Moran hasn't gotten on board yet. Moran's vote is crucial, since he's regarded as one of six undecided Republicans. Two GOP senators, Maine's Susan Collins and Kentucky's Rand Paul, are opposed to the legislation unveiled Thursday, meaning one more defection dooms the bill. Republicans control 52 Senate seats. It would make sense that Roberts, a veteran lawyer and powerful Agriculture Committee chairman, serving his fourth term, would try to persuade his younger colleagues. Now think about this, folks. Obamacare was passed unanimously by the Democrats, right? Every Republican held out, and rightfully so. If they can't get enough votes, if the Republicans cannot get enough votes, that should tell you something. There's a very good reason why they're struggling to get this passed. Because it's just as unconstitutional and it's just as cumbersome as Obamacare. That's why. And we're very fortunate that we have these few Republicans standing up for us. Personally, if I were them, I would leave the party and I would declare myself an independent, because this Republican Party is just as socialist as the left, excuse me, certainly in this regard. So let me go back to what Rand Paul was saying, and then we'll continue.
Sort of why we have such an angry country now. We think that people have ill motives, but I think Republicans want people to have health insurance. We want people to be healthy. So do Democrats. We just believe in different type of economic system or different types of limitations of government or more expansive government and how we can do it.
One of the things, Senator Paul, you've talked about wanting to do away with is the Obamacare tax on individuals making over $250,000 a year. That would be that's the money that's been used to pay for many of the subsidies for people with lower income.
Right.
It's a transfer, taking money away from those who have more to give it to people who have less, but that troubles you?
No, we already do quite a bit of that, and it's called Medicaid. The problem or the fundamental flaw of Obamacare was that they put regulations on the insurance, about 12 regulations, which increased the cost of the insurance. And so President Obama wanted to help poor working class people, but he actually hurt them by making the insurance too expensive to want to buy. I had someone at the house just recently who was doing some work, and he said, oh, my son doesn't have insurance. He's paying the penalty because it's too expensive. So President Obama said, we want to make insurance perfect for people, but he added all these regulatory mandates, made it too expensive. Young, healthy people didn't buy it, and the people remaining in the insurance pool were sicker and sicker. That's the adverse selection and the death spiral of Obamacare. And so, really, we do need to discuss the intricacies of what worked and what didn't work in Obamacare. And I think the better way to do this is to let individuals have the freedom to choose what kind of insurance is best for them. The government doesn't always know best. Maybe the individual should be allowed to choose.
Senator, I hear you, and I've read some of the other comments you've made lately. You have some very strong views on this. As you just said, you'd like to do away with this tax on individuals earning high earners. You've talked about doing away with the mandates in Obamacare. You talk about health savings accounts. But other members of the Senate, including other Republicans, have very different ideas. They're worried about these Medicaid cuts in this legislation. Where is the common ground?
Well, that's what we're going to see if we can find it. I mean, one of the things that horrifies me is that we would be giving taxpayer money to very, very wealthy corporations. The insurance companies make about $15 billion a year. They've doubled their profit margin under Obamacare. And so now we're going to take a lot of this and call it a stabilization fund, but really it is a bailout of insurance companies. And I just think that's wrong. I just can't see why ordinary average taxpayers would be giving money to very, very wealthy corporations. An analogous situation would be this. We all complain that new cars cost too much. Why don't we have a new car stabilization fund and give $130 billion dollars to car companies? We could do that in any industry, but it's not really good economics. What it is you're simply transferring money from the ordinary average taxpayers to very wealthy corporations.
But Senator, my understanding is that that plan was put in there to take care of some of those people at the lower income level because of these changes in Medicaid. I still don't see where the middle ground is between you, other Republicans, and certainly with Democrats.
Actually, the money in the stabilization fund, $130 billion, which I call an insurance bailout, is put in to try to cure the adverse selection that Obamacare created by making insurance too expensive. Healthy people didn't buy it. They tried to fix this by forcing young people to buy it through an individual mandate. Even that didn't work. So the way the Republicans fix it is they don't actually fix it, they subsidize it. So, you know, we have to fix what went wrong with Obamacare, not just recapitulate something that's broken.
What you're saying makes it sound like you're still uncertain this is going to pass.
Yes, I'm uncertain whether it's going to be enough of a repeal bill for conservatives, and we need to, you know, adhere to our promise. We promised people we'd repeal it. We talked about all the problems of Obamacare. We shouldn't leave half of it in place and expect things to be better.
Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, we thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Exactly what he said there. It's a bailout. Why do insurance companies need to be bailed out when they're they've profited by $15 billion? This is ridiculous. And here's Senator Ted Cruz. Now, he's called a far-right conservative. Yeah, he is. He conserves the status quo. Here's part of this bailout program. And you're going to love this one. And this, see, what I'm going to read to you here is exact proof of why Obamacare under this bill is not being repealed at all. Check this out. Senator Ted Cruz announced Thursday, a few days ago, that he will support the Senate health care bill in its current form after a new draft included a new version of an amendment he's been pushing. Cruz said that he will vote yes on a motion to proceed vote Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell hopes to bring to the floor early next week. Here it comes. The proposal would create a fund that would help insurers cover those with higher medical costs. But to qualify, insurers must have to offer at least one plan that fully complies with all of Obamacare's regulations. Now, I ask you this. How can any insurance plan be offered that complies with Obamacare's regulations if Obamacare is being repealed? I'll ask the question again. And I'll ask it another way. If Obamacare is being repealed, why would an insurance company be forced to offer a plan that complies with all of Obamacare's regulations to receive a government handout? Does that not fly in the face of any promise that's been offered to us? Where is President Trump blasting this amendment? This amendment is a joke. And to create a fund from the government, where's the money coming from? It's coming from us. So, we get to pay health insurance premiums to an insurance company, and then we get to pay taxes to a government-run fund to give the same insurance companies more money, so they can so-called lower premiums to unfortunate people. So, on one side, they say, we want to reduce Medicaid, but now we're going to have a fund to give the money to the insurance companies. You get it? And these insurance companies then will give campaign contributions to people like Ted Cruz when he's up for re-election. Folks, it's the same concept of the shell game, except they took the peanut and moved it into another shell. That's all this is. To me, this is communism. It's communism. Government subsidies to private industries is communism. You can call it anything you want. That's what it comes down to. It's government and corporate collusion, and we the people get screwed. So, I will be tweeting Senator Cruz today and tell him he can shove his amendment and that he represents me, Michael B. from Texas, and he votes yes on this, he's not getting my vote when he's up for re-election. I'll stay home. Or I'll vote. See, what'll happen is, I'll vote in his primary if he's running for re-election for senator. I'll run for any person that goes up against him. And if there's nobody, I'll stay home. And I'll stay home in the final battle, 2018, to whatever it is. I'm out. Because I'm not going to vote for a guy that wants to continue America's march towards communism. I'm not doing it. You can. I'm not. So he's going to get a tweet, and I'll be following up as this progresses with him. You're not going to get my vote, Teddy. You lost me during the presidential campaign, and you're going to lose me for your next election cycle. You are. And, ladies and gentlemen, you better start pushing back. This is not an improvement to what they put out the first time in 2017. This is basically a total 180 to what they put out in late 2015, and this is a total 180 from what President Trump promised us when we elected him. This is a scam. This is a sea of lies. And you people better stop the freaking rock star worship, because I'm getting sick. I am sick of your rock star worship of Donald Trump. Your memes are not impressive anymore. We can't live by the argument, well, it's better than Hillary. That's done. Hillary's been defeated. Trump is the president. It's time to take the blinders off and look at what he's doing. And since this Russian crap dried up on Trump, they've now moved to Donnie Jr. And this is what we're talking about on Facebook. Instead of talking about this sham of a bill and where the hell are the tax cuts, baby? That's what I'm talking about. So, moving on, let's talk about the Clinton body count. Seems to be going higher. And this is courtesy of shiftplan.com, Max Slavo. And this was posted by Infowars.com, Alex Jones. So, the Haiti official who exposed the Clinton Foundation is found dead. Gee, not surprised there. The mainstream media's silence over Klaus Eberwein's death is deafening. Eberwein was a former Haitian government official who was expected to expose the extent of Clinton Foundation corruption and malpractice next week. He was found dead in Miami at the age of 50. The circumstances surrounding Eberwein's death are also nothing less than unpalatable. According to Miami-Dade's medical examiner records supervisor, the official cause of death is gunshot to the head. Eberwein's death has been registered as suicide by the government. But not long before his death, he acknowledged that his life was in danger because he was outspoken on the criminal activities of the Clinton Foundation. Eberwein was a fierce critic of the Clinton Foundation's activities in the Caribbean island, where he served as Director General of the government's Economic Development Agency, Fonds d'Assistance Économique et Sociale, for 3 years. The Clinton Foundation, they are criminals, they are thieves, they are liars, they are a disgrace, Eberwein said at a protest outside the Clinton Foundation headquarters in Miami that took place last year. I'm sorry, in Manhattan. Eberwein was due to appear on Tuesday before the Haitian Senate Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission. Sorry, I lost my place. Right. Where he was widely expected to testify that the Clinton Foundation misappropriated Haiti earthquake donations from international donors. But this suicide gets even more disturbing. Eberwein was only 50 years old and reportedly told acquaintances he feared for his life. His close friends and business partners were taken aback by the idea that he may have committed suicide. "It's really shocking," said friend Gilbert Bailey. "We grew up together. He was like family." During and after his government tenure, Eberwein faced allegations of fraud and corruption on how the agency he headed administered funds. Among the issues was FAES oversight of the shoddy construction of several schools built after Haiti's devastating 2010 earthquake. But according to Eberwein, it was the Clinton Foundation who was deeply in the wrong, and he intended to testify and prove it on Tuesday. Eberwein was expected to testify against the foundation in court and ends up committing suicide. Haven't we heard this before? Untimely deaths seem to follow the Clintons around, and this one especially is probably something, considering the mainstream media is silent about his death. So that's something else I can certainly put up on Facebook. Now, in good news, Ohio seems to maybe be waking up about this gun-free zone nonsense, which only puts people like you and me, law-abiding citizens, at risk in certain areas, because we're unarmed, we're defenseless, and we're sitting ducks. Now, this comes from Godfather Politics, Kelly Sharp, July 15th, 2015. As of right now, it's a felony to carry a firearm in a gun-free zone in Ohio. Well, I'm sure it's a felony everywhere in the country. There's also a risk of 1 year in prison and a $2,500 fine. However, lawmakers are looking into making a significant change in that. Ohio legislature is currently considering a bill that will lessen the penalty of a concealed handgun in a no-gun zone so that people are not risking a felony background to having the firearm. With a felony, people lose their right to vote and own guns. The bill, which is sponsored by Republicans, who allow licensed carriers to take the firearm into places that are considered gun-free zones, including government buildings, restaurants, and schools. Here's the kicker. They just can't get caught. Well, that's kind of weak, isn't it? However, if they do get caught, they will simply be asked to leave, and the citizen won't face criminal charges. So, I mean, that's cool with me. Hey, look. If a restaurant owner doesn't want guns in his restaurant, you know what? He's free to make that decision. And I, as the consumer, can say, well, you know, maybe I won't frequent this restaurant anymore if I can't go in there with my gun. See, that's liberty, that's choice. Those are options. So, HB 233 shows no person who has a valid license to carry a concealed handgun or is a qualified military member and is discovered carrying a concealed handgun onto land or premises in violation of a sign posted pursuant to division blah 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 shall do either of the following: refuse or fail to leave the land or premises upon being requested to do so by the owner, lessee, or person in control of the land or premises, or by the individual's agent or employee; return within 30 days to do the same to the same land or premises while knowingly in possession of a firearm in violation of a sign posted pursuant to division blah 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 or revised code. Considering that Americans who have obtained their concealed carry license are generally good, law-abiding people, people who just want to practice the Second Amendment rights to protect themselves if the need arises, this shouldn't be a problem. And to me, it's not a problem. So, I think this is very good, what Ohio is doing. I certainly hope that it passes. And, you know, again, the Second Amendment protects my rights to move freely about all 50 states and its territories. In my opinion, all of these states and federal restrictions are a breach of that Second Amendment rights. And Ohio here has it right. If I go into a restaurant, somebody sees that I have a firearm, and the chief operator of that restaurant asks me to leave, or maybe get the gun off, put the gun back in the car, then I should comply. If I don't comply and I stay, well, that's a violation of his property rights, and I should suffer a penalty. So I think this is very constitutional. I think it's very American, and I like it. To conclude the show, I'm just going to rattle off the latest in the Islamic terrorist attacks worldwide. Already, we have two today, and it's barely 11:20 Central. Now, I know, yes, the eastern part of the world is ahead. Hyderabad, Pakistan, 2 killed, 4 injured. A suicide bomber kills 2 local security personnel. Maiduguri, Nigeria, 8 killed, 13 injured. A female suicide bomber rushes into a crowd of worshippers at a rival mosque, well, that's cool, and detonates, killing 8. Yesterday, 3 incidents. Baghdad, Iraq, 1 killed, 7 injured. Mujahideen take out a civilian with a car bomb. Shabwa, Yemen, 5 killed, 3 injured. 5 local soldiers manning a checkpoint are raked with automatic weapons by Al-Qaeda. Alexandria, Egypt, only 1 injured. An attempted stabbing spree at a church, probably a Catholic church or a Christian church, is thwarted by a guard who was injured in the process. Well, thank goodness they had a guard, right? 1, 2, 3, 4 incidents, on the 15th, Saturday. Muna Delta, Nigeria, 1 killed, 1 injured. 12-year-old boy is killed after Boko Haram straps a bomb to him. How nice. Dara, Syria, 1 killed. A man is shot in the head for blasphemy. What, he didn't bow down to Muhammad? What a shame. Patani, Thailand, 7 injured. 3 women and a 4-year-old boy are among the casualties of a targeted shooting attack against Buddhists. 4 killed, 1 injured in Qalat, Afghanistan. Sunni hardliners opened fire on a group of policemen, killing 4. So that is your wrap for today, folks. My name is Michael B. This is the Truth Zone. Thank you for listening in. See you tomorrow, 10 a.m. Central Time.